There isn't very much about all this you actually have to know. But what you have to know about it, you have to know well. Because you can hit explosive spots in a pre-clear that won't give you time to go look it up. I'm reminded of some cartoons by Bairnsfather and World War I, the British cartoonist. One of them, a very amusing one, is there's a pilot, they didn't have any parachutes in those days, and the pilot is falling free through space and so on, and the plane's all shot up and falling over that way, and he's got the barometer in his hand, the altimeter in his hand, and he says, 3,000 feet more, and then the bump. But we have a situation occasionally in auditing that matches another one of these cartoons, and that is the plane is in a spin, Fokkers are coming in from all directions, and the pilot is sitting there, and he's got a book marked How to Fly. And he said, I was sure it was on page 16. Well, anytime you have to look something up in mid-flight, anytime you have to look something up, it discourages the pre-clear. The speed of knowing, which you have to audit or actually to perform any aerial acrobatics, is at least a few seconds before it happens. You know from what is happening, what is going to happen. And this is the speed of knowing that you would call prediction. It's prediction speed. Now, some auditors have a prediction speed of 2 or 3 seconds. That's not fast, that's slow. 2 or 3 seconds before the pre-clear throws up, he says the pre-clear is going to throw up. Some auditors have a prediction speed of 30 seconds. That's pretty good. Pre-clear started into this incident, and he's starting to look a little bit tense and strained. The auditor says, yeah, I bet we're now going to hit that thing that's been worrying him so much. He will now double up in a ball, the next motion for this. And if he's very good, he'll shoot the question to him right there that'll finish the whole job. Bang. I mean, he's that much ahead of himself all the time. And then there is speed of knowing, which goes up above this level and comes into terms of hours. Pre-clear walks in the office, and your speed of knowing says immediately, oh boy, here is an apathy case. This character is going to try to run heavy incidents. This character isn't going to want to have anything to do with overt acts, but he's not going to be very antagonistic about it. And so you choose your course of action accordingly. And you just estimate what you're going to do with this pre-clear by estimating where he is on the tone scale. Now, you have the tone scale, and it'll tell you pretty well what to do. You see a pre-clear walk in. There are various ways that you can estimate what this pre-clear is going to do. You sort of get instinctively after a while. You don't even think about it. The fellow sits down in the chair, starts to talk to you. And you say, well, the next 5 or 6 words are going to be a nice, good, solid, backhanded slap. You say to yourself. You'll say, now I understand I was talking to Mrs. Jones, and she said that you were very good and that you really knew your business. And by being able to predict, you don't go up curve on this. See, if you go up curve, then you can go down curve. In other words, you're not in effect if you know what this is, because you saw this fellow sit down in the chair rather deviously. He's sort of devious in the way he starts in. He's a 1-1. So he's going to give you a big compliment, and then he's going to cuff you. So he said, I talked to Miss Jones. She said, you're a very good auditor, knew all about your business and so forth, and I could have great confidence in you. And you're pretty dumb if you're stimulus response enough to start saying, well, because the next sentence is, but of course I always knew that she never really could estimate these things. As a matter of fact, the last doctor she recommended had just lost a patient And I, of course, can't be sure about this sort of thing because nobody really knows much about the mind. There's been a lot of things said about Dianetics. Of course, you probably know a lot about Dianetics, but is there anything to know, even if you could know anything about Dianetics? But prediction speed depends really on only one thing. You could say it depends upon my mental acuteness. It depends upon my powers of observation, which if I go out and take the Boy Scout test for how many items are in this window and practice that every day and get lots of facsimiles, and particularly heavy effort facsimiles, if I learn and learn and learn, pretty soon I'll get brighter and brighter and brighter, which you won't. See, the more facsimiles you get, the dumber you get. That's the whole trick. Awareness through action is one of these. Awareness through action. You say to this fellow, well, the way to really get well is to go out there and hike 5 miles a day and lift these safes up on the second story window and to turn out for track and do push-ups, 85 push-ups every morning with a dumbbell across the back of your spine. He'll become very, very much, well, he won't become very aware in present time, but he'll get very solidly fixed in some present time. Why? Because you're adding in facsimiles, facsimiles, heavy facsimiles all the way along the line, you see. And if he thinks by the accumulation of these facsimiles he's going to get better, he will eventually wind up to be almost as bright as a football star. That's pretty dumb. Now, you know, you ever see one of these guys with big muscles? Well, he develops them in here, too. Always develops them between the ears. Actually, the more heavy facsimiles a person will pick up, the less active he is. And that applies as well to his thoughts. Therefore, the ideal state of being is to float about a foot off the ground, unaffected by gravity, and just float. But if you're moving on the time track, you can generally leave these facsimiles behind. And while this is a desirable state, few people seem to achieve it. That is, they get moving on the track. Now, the point I am making about this whole thing is that knowledge of the subject, which is so precise as to admit of no indecision, keeps you moving on the track steadily because you never get any maybes. You don't have a big maybe hanging there. Gee whiz, when that fellow started to froth at the mouth, was it because I was running an incident which contained the time he got his mouth washed out with soap? I don't know whether that would be that kind of an incident or not. You'll actually start hanging yourself up on the track every time you try to solve a case. Why? Because you don't have enough data to make a clear decision. So you become less bright about auditing, not brighter. You see? Now, there's certain basic fundamentals, and I'm trying to cover fundamentals. In addition to that, I have given as my most concentrated point of attention reduction to a simplicity. So the simplicity will cover a wide area of data. And when you reduce to a simplicity, this permits a kind of thought, you know, this kind of thought, approximation, one of the earlier new axioms, the type of thinking called approximation, also is another kind of thinking, and these are both more or less the same. Extrapolation. That is to say, you know one fact, so you can derive many facts from this one fact. You're actually doing an approximation of the whole problem, and you just take this one simplicity and you approximate everything there is out from that, and you've got all the answers out here. That's a good, handy way of thinking. If you persist in looking at textbooks to give you an answer to every problem that comes up, you're not going to be able to do much about it. The point is, you develop the facility of being able to know a few data, and from these few data, knowing that they are very important data, you know other data hinges on this, and sort of practice on it. I wonder what cats sitting on the back fence have to do with the tension unit flow. You can sort of figure it that way one day. In other words, try to relate back to simple data. Well, these cats are interested in survival, you'd say to yourself. Well, and if they didn't make new cats, they wouldn't go on the genetic line, and therefore they pay attention to each other, and they howl on a back fence because, well, I guess that's aesthetic for cats. That's a nice aesthetic for cats. Well, of course, they attract other cats around so that we can have new cats. You say, that's very simple. False salt. And so, therefore, the attention unit system comes out with a voice, the voice of a cat, which is trying to draw the attention of other cats. Very simple. It must be on a certain vibration level that would make other cats interested in the cat who was yowling. And sure enough, you find this is true. A cat is putting out a sonic vibration, which is restimulative to other cats. And then you get more cats. Now, I wanted to cover this subject for you. But, you see, if you think that way, then prediction thinking is very easy. If you think, you go around and pick out things in the society. Why are cars this way, and why is this way, and how does this relate to the body of knowledge in which I'm interested? And if you just keep reducing data down to the simple data, what you know, all of a sudden, it becomes clearer and clearer and clearer to you, and the next thing you know, you only have to know these simple data, and you'll work it out the reverse way. You'll do an extrapolation, approximation of the situation. You approximate the situation, and you have answers to all sorts of things. So your preclear is lying on the couch, and you know that this and that is wrong with him, you figure, and how do you gain that? Well, you know certain basic data, and you know what the shape this preclear is in, and all you do is mock up the bridge between what should be right and what is wrong, and you say, well, this and this must be lying on that bridge. You say, okay, audit it, start at the beginning, and you know that these incidents operate in certain ways because people operate in certain ways. You know this preclear scared, so you say, how about? He says, you know, he said, I've been afraid all of my life that my mother, say, where's the hollow spot in your body? Oh, he says, right. Sort of a hollow spot in my neck. And he said, what's this got to do with my mother? And so forth. And you say, well, can you feel this stuff emanating out in the back of your neck? Sounds non-sequitur, this preclear. He doesn't know what you're talking about. You are dealing in black magic. Well, deal in all the black magic you want to for public consumption. Go around and wave your magic handkerchief over people all you want to. Put guys in horrible condition if you want to. They're feeling apathetic, so you sit there and say, it's too bad. Yes, I know, the world is in horrible shape. You don't feel that way at all, but you just keep agreeing with them. Guy finally gets sick. The fellow comes in, and you say, this guy has really been causing me a lot of trouble. I wish he'd sort of calm down and go do what I tell him to do, and he isn't doing that. So you say, You know, that beautiful job you did out on the hall yesterday and got everything all clear and clean and everything else and polished up the whole hall, so on. He said, yes, yes. You say, well, no lady just fell down out there and broke her leg. Black magic. He'll really respond. By the way, he'll never, is very often, all he can think of is trying to inquire into whether or not she broke her leg. His mind just gets fixed right on that point of the down curve. He doesn't really care whether anybody broke their leg or not. But he's gotten fixed on a down curve. Did I do an overt act? Didn't I do an overt act? Now, let's see, I've never slipped on a floor and had my leg broken, so therefore I have no right to give anybody else a slick floor to slip on to get their leg broken. Well, gee. He's in a mess. You can hash up somebody's mind merely by changing the rules on him. All you've got to do is change the rules of conduct on him. You keep telling him, you should be more polite. Be polite. Be more agreeable to people. Be polite. Get socially acceptable. Like people. And learn to associate with people. Associate with more people and get to like them. And get people to like people. Go around and get people to like people. If you really sold this package and you sold it very, very thoroughly, what would happen? You'd have a psychotic on your hands. He'd carry it out to that extent. Why? It's enforced ARC. And actually, all possible aberration is involved with ARC at various positions on the track. So how do you get enforced ARC? You just make people like people. You go around and say, love thy neighbor. You hear me? Love thy neighbor. Say everybody's good, all is good, everybody likes everybody. You have to be socially acceptable. Don't be antisocial. Don't dislike people. Like people. You have to like people. You find out if you like people, they'll like you. Now, you just go around liking people. No, brother. Now, You can work it in reverse. It's just as bad. You can make people inhibit people from liking people. You can go around and spread a lot of N-theta around about people, so people will spread a lot of N-theta around about people, so you're inhibiting ARC. But supposing you knew a datum which underlay every other datum on the whole chart of attitudes, on all of this conduct, ARC, and so on. Supposing you knew one datum out of which you could quickly extrapolate all this other data, it'd be a handy thing to have, wouldn't it? It can be summed up, again, in one word, invalidation. Invalidation covers the entire chart of attitudes. And when we say invalidation, we don't mean that invalidation is the reverse of validation. When we say validation, we're talking about a level not very high up the tone scale. I keep having to validate this fellow. Yes, I validated this, I validated that, I validated him. I told him he was right. It made him feel much better. Well, you know, what you're saying when you say that is, I gave him a license to survive, I gave him a license to survive, I gave him a license to survive. So invalidation is giving somebody a license to survive. Validation is giving him a license to survive. Invalidation is giving him a license not to survive. One, two. There are two levels, and we know those levels as enforced ARC for validation and inhibited ARC for invalidation. Invalidation has a mechanical force background. And this mechanical force background produces the concepts which are listed at the bottom of the chart of attitudes, such as I know not, I am not, I am effect, forget, destroyed, all the rest of this across the bottom of the scale lumps into this one thing, invalidation, and invalidation is itself this one thing. Now, validation, as I told you, is not very much higher above that. So validation or invalidation presupposes that somebody is interfering with the self-determinism of another. Somebody's interfering with somebody's self-determinism if they start validating or invalidating. But of course, it's not very serious. You see, every aberrated thought is preceded by a counter-effort. There's one axiom in there that needs that extra word written in it. It says every counter-effort, every thought is preceded by a counter-effort is the way the axiom is written. And that is incorrect. There's an added word there. It says every aberrated thought has been preceded by a counter-effort. Now, that's actually a correct, more correct viewpoint. Counter-efforts precede aberrated thoughts. Thoughts can exist without a counter-effort preceding them. But they'd be very unaberrated thoughts, you see. So they'd be way up tone scale, they'd be very pure, very valid, way up here on the aesthetic band and above. Very, very fine lines. So every aberrated thought has been preceded by a counter effort. So if a person is having an aberrated thought, you know that earlier on the track, there is a counter effort. Not a counter effort which says that. No. Let's be very sharp about this. Every aberrated thought has, earlier than it occurs, a counter effort. Now, oddly enough, you could get a counter effort right now in present time, which would not be instantaneous with the emotion or the thought. The emotion would come later, and the thought would come later. It's counter-effort emotion thought. Why? Here's your mesh universe, this level. Here is your... This is a mesh universe with lots of matter in it. At this level, here is mesh universe with energy in it. At this level, free energy. Energy flow. And I'm talking now about energy like goes through electric lights and comes out of sound, so on. Energy, free energy at this level. And here we get free energy. Such a fine wave that only a theta being could create it. I mean, it's just so tiny, it's almost 1/∞ wavelength. Way up here, and up here, is the theoretical theta, or actual theta, which has no wavelength at all. It exists. It exists, but from it comes this energy, which we call energy. Now, you understand that we call energy energy when we measure it easily on a meter. If you've got a fine enough meter, you could get this energy, too. But you can get this very easily on a meter. This is your emotional band. The center of that band is 0.024 centimeters. It'll give you wavelength of the energy involved in this band. It's very gross. Very gross. And down here is matter. Well, now your counter effort comes into the field of matter, really, or matter being hit by a free energy field, which causes an impact, which in itself is capable of being matter, or it's a free energy hitting a free energy, which creates matter. You can get that. Doug called me a little while ago, saying, you're talking about these ridges, solid ridges, existing in the vicinity of hollow spots. He's out in the China Sea. You've seen two hurricanes, two typhoons, pulling apart, leaving a hollow spot. And he said, you ought to have seen the pattern of solid ridges caused by those two tumultuous currents of air. He said, where those two would cross and meet, you had solid wave formations in the sea. He says, it's very spectacular. All right, you could then take two free energies and bang them together and get matter. Or interpolate one energy with another energy and get matter. All right, that's at this level. Or you could have this flowing along here, just free energy, and it hits matter. And of course, it makes an impact. And that's what really we generally mean by counter effort. Matter hits matter, or a wave hits a wave, and we get counter effort. Counter effort is down in this band. This is a motion which is in a more or less free energy level. And up here is thought. So the progress of a counter effort's transmission into a facsimile, the counter effort hits, it is expressed as a counter effort. There is a free energy travel through the body that records it, that makes it possible. And this free energy is recorded as a facsimile. What you're actually doing is going upstairs, steps. 1, 2, 3. Hit. The free energy travel makes a facsimile. In other words, the guy doesn't get hit, and that becomes the facsimile. It's translated. You get the idea. It's a transmission. It's three stages. Now, when he thinks of a facsimile, it turns around here and goes into a free energy state, and then is recorded in the material universe. When he wants to hit something, he can actually take a thought here and translate it through, if you please, not only emotion, but the whole endocrine system. The endocrine system is the medium. It's the switchboard through which he does this. He goes through the endocrine system, and he exerts it on matter. So there's the thought going this way, or the thought going this way. Now, let me express this much more plainly to you. A counter effort occurs. And if you have a counter effort, a heavy counter effort, someplace on the track, you can pretty well count on it showing up later on the track as a heavy emotion. There'll be an incident there somewhere. There'll be an emotional incident. And above the emotional incident, even later on the track, you will have a thought incident, all stemming out of this counter effort. Here's your time track, and this is early, and this is now. So, fellow gets hit over the head here, Something else happens here. He feels an emotion.
These two incidents are pinned to each other,
and after that, he has thoughts. Now, if you start to audit a concept, by the way, you can also use in concept running intention running. You can run the man's intention, or you can run the intention of others. And it'll evolve through the straight concepts. So that here you have this fellow hit over the head when he's a little boy. Later on, he has an emotional upset with his wife, and he begins to get headaches. And pretty soon, he decides that women are no good. Those are three stages. And you start to disentangle this as an auditor, and you find out that he got hit over the head when he was a little boy, all right, by a girl. Not dissimilar in coloration to the woman he married. And everything went along all right till one day she said something that angered him. And he suddenly thought, boy, I'd like to bash her head in. An emotional upset has lurking in it at least an overt thought. Overt thought. He doesn't do it. He restrains himself. And after that, the only thing he can conclude is, out of all this chain of thoughts, is women are no good. Because he can't solve the problem. It's a big maybe. What's the maybe about women? Women are maybe. Therefore, maybes are no good, so women are no good. It's very simple, straightforward thinking. I want to stress how reasonable and rational this is for you. Because this is what thinking is out in the society. And what you'll generally handle. Here is your counter effort. Later, whether by seconds or hours, years, centuries, there'll be an emotional incident. And then here will be thought coming forward toward now. You'll get this situation every time you have a counter effort. This is not the invariable pattern, by the way. It's a standard pattern, but it isn't the pattern. It's one of three patterns. But just disabuse yourself of any question about this. It simply says this, that when a fellow is hit, struck, impeded in some fashion so that he receives a counter effort, a heavy counter effort, you can count on this occurring. And this will occur invariably in greater or lesser degree. It can occur so mildly, so slightly, that you wouldn't even notice it. That would be in a very sane person. It would notice it. But usually in a very aberrated person, it's quite marked, it's quite severe what it does to his mental pattern. So when a person receives a counter effort, you can count later on there being an emotional incident about it. And if this is a heavy counter effort, this then is an emotional incident to the degree of what we call a secondary. And that is the source of secondaries. And this is the package of thought which comes out. The secondary is so worrisome. It's just churns, churns, churns. It's just saying maybe, 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 one way or the other. Did it, don't it, wouldn't it, shouldn't it, couldn't it, so on. When you get that sort of a situation, you get the fellow thinking. He thinks, should I have hit Agnes? No, I shouldn't have hit Agnes. Well, if I had hit Agnes, of course it was terrible about the whole thing. She shouldn't have insulted me, though. Or poor old grandfather. My life was wonderful until grandfather departed. But now that he's departed, things are all different. If he'd only been alive, things would have been different. You hear this in a whole section of the country. If Lee had not surrendered at Appomattox, I would now own 163 slaves. You see, my great-grandfather, maybe, is sitting as a big emotional secondary. Actually, by the way, the counter-effort there was Gettysburg. Not Appomattox. The high tide of the Confederacy got smashed back. Confederacy almost won that war, right there at Gettysburg. They realized it, and there was a big counter-effort, but they kept on going, and they didn't get emotional about it for a long time. Almost 3 years, I think it was. 2 years, anyhow. And then all of a sudden, bing, Lee surrenders, big secondary, and after that, maybe, for 100 years, isn't it? It's 90 years. Well, that's in a culture aberrates in the same fashion. By the way, they're snapping out of it now. They're snapping out of it. They're saying Roosevelt gave him enough counter efforts down there that. So, when you see a person thinking very violently on a subject, obsessively, compulsively, or when you find this person unable to think on a subject, same thing, this lower on the tone scale, or when you find any aberrated thinking going on in this person, or there's something wrong about the way this person behaves or thinks about life, or it's non-survival, you know that this is the way their time track looks on that subject. Here's the thoughts of the subject, back here's a secondary, and back here's an effort, counter-effort. That's the way it looks. That's the pattern. You know that's what you're looking at. Now, to audit this out, you have to audit it on the basis of the motivator, overt act, and the dead. And that shows you the various combinations which underlie this. But this is what you see as you audit, how you take it about, how you take it apart, and the various component inner parts of it are the motivator, overt act, and the dead. But you look at a person, you look at a preclear, you find out they're thinking or not thinking, that they're not thinking where they should be thinking or they're thinking where they shouldn't be thinking. Either way, back of that's the secondary, back of that's that. Now this applies to one life. You'll find out, and by the way, it said this, I think, in the first book. Yeah, I'm sure it did. That every emotional or every painful emotion engram had lying under it a physical pain engram. Yeah. And you can expect when you audit an emotional engram to find yourself auditing at any moment the physical pain engram on which it's sitting, although they may be 20 years apart. Well, that's anatomy. That's mental anatomy. That's the way facsimiles pack up on the track, you might say, in ridges. These are three ridges. There's hollow spots. There's pushes and drives and other things. In other words, the three patterns of attention units are visible here. The fellow receives the counter-effort and tries to use the counter-effort. It's very smooth. It's a very outgoing flow. All of a sudden, something stops his use of the counter-effort. Something or other happens. Then Grandma died, and after that, life felt empty to him. Hollow spot. As far as thoughts up here are concerned, it's just another ridge. And you'll find a key incident sticking him on the track for each one of these lines. For each one of these, you'll find a key incident that sticks him. But it may be so bad, the earlier track back here is supplanted and it's got another incident here. That's an earlier segment of track, a couple hundred years back. And here's an earlier section of track that is back here, and it's got four kinds of incident, and it's balled up in this counter effort. You see what you're getting here? As this balls up, you're getting the aspect of confusion or messed matter patterns. So you have way up here, you've got a much earlier section of track, and it's got this balled up with this, and this crossed up with that, so the fellow's thinking about this. And after that, you're getting time track. Now, to take this time track apart and stretch it out again, in other words, lay him out properly, you have to know just the data I'm giving you this evening. You have to know this. This is a picture. You should be able to get a map of this in your own mind. Anytime you see this sort of thing occurring, you should just be able to see the map. Bang, bang, and that's the way the map looks. That's all there is to it. You know that in this lifetime, you're going to find this situation. Maybe it's minor magnitude. Maybe you won't find it in this lifetime in sufficient magnitude to separate the incidents and separate the track. Don't be surprised if that's the case. You can always pull a track apart in 4,000 or 5,000 hours with light auditing. But you can. You can always do so. Very adroit light auditing. Or you can take good old clumsy, kick them in the teeth, let them roll auditing, and get the track all torn to pieces in 20 or 30 hours. So that it's lying out straight again, so it isn't all balled up. But this is the pattern which happened. You may have to dig around for quite a while. But in the process of not being able to discover it, first crack out of the box, in the process of having to use on the A-meter for hours and hours and study this and study that and so forth, don't lose the map of what you're looking for. It isn't that the map has gone wrong. What's happened is you're running a denier. So let's not get so upset about not being able to find out what's wrong with the preclear. You're running an inhibited thought line. You just ask him what he can't think about, and you'll get the drops just as big. You say, all right, you've had him on an E-meter for quite some time, and you haven't quite been able to get any kind of computation on the thing. Just start to ask him about things he mustn't think about. Is it true that you shouldn't think about your family? Bang! What member of the family? Bang, bang, we're off to the races, something like that. He's got to avoid thinking about his father. He must avoid it at all costs. You'll find out father's missing on the track. Father's actions are off the track. You'll find there's overt acts. You'll find the fellow scared his father. You'll find his father scared him. You'll find all sorts of ball-ups on the thing, all on a denier basis, fear, run away, leave, can't stay around basis. And, of course, that's what his thought process is doing. So what kind of an emotional situation do we have? We have a departure. Somebody left somebody on the subject of Papa. Somebody left somebody. You find out that father and mother got divorced when he was 5. There's a big, terrific scene. Oh, boy. Lots of yump. And you just start to talk about this thing, and he just starts to go. This is what he must avoid at all costs. He mustn't think about this thing. So what do we find that thing lying on as an effort? What's the counter-effort back there? Don't think there isn't one. There is. If you're auditing one life, you'll find out it's generally very, very early in infant life, if it's lying that far back, or it's in the prenatal area. Boy, it's a real bang, clash, crash situation that's on the same chain of leading. So, of course, you couldn't get any of the three because they're just all the attention units are bouncing from them. They're just tearing off from them like mad. And how can this poor fellow think? Everything he thinks about is leading. He's got to run. He's got to go. He's got to go somewhere else. It doesn't matter where he's going to go. It doesn't matter what he's going to do. Something. Or he's on the second phase of that, is I must go, but I can't go, so I have to sit here. There you got it. And this is the pattern. 1, 2, 3. Kick. And this pattern here, on the data I'm going to give you, next, falls up with the motivator over that, that falls up into a ball like that. Eventually, on the whole time track, he just gets completely blank. Now, this is true of one life, but why is it that you have to audit so far back to really get releases on cases? And why is it everybody's so sensitive to invalidation? And what is invalidation? Well, invalidation has a lot to do with it. The technical definition of invalidation is invalidation is a condition occurring from the cancellation of any thought, motion, or effort by any counter-thought, counter-emotion, or counter-effort. Just because I said it's slow, don't think it's complicated. That's very, very basic. Tremendously basic. Invalidation is cancellation of thought, emotion, or effort. One's own thought, one's own emotion, or one's own effort is invalidated when one's thought, emotion, or effort meets an exterior thought, an exterior motion, or an exterior effort sufficient to cancel out his, or tend to cancel out his. You follow that? That's invalidation concern. Now, if you get somebody, for instance, let's say you know this. Here you've got the full chart of attitudes sitting up here in all of its beautiful columns, gorgeously arrayed, ready to cave in the sanity of almost anybody. I've seen people read that and then realize where they were. and dive right straight for that level. Actually, they weren't there. They suddenly decided they were at a lower harmonic than where they were, because they wouldn't move, dive, or get unhappy about it in any degree if they really were where they thought they were.
All right, here's your various chart columns. Along the bottom here is invalidated. And up here a little higher is validated. I showed you they're not opposites of each other. And of course, well up the column up here is just self-determination.
Here's self-determinism. Self-determinism then is composed of ARC in a gradient scale, and is composed of all these other gradient scales, but all this is dependent upon magnitude and force. All this goes back to his counter-effort. If one overcomes his counter-efforts, he's winning. And if one is losing to his counter-efforts, he's losing. And if one overcame his counter-efforts, he would know, of course. And if he didn't, he wouldn't know. He can believe if he's overcoming counter-efforts, and he successfully does so. But if he doesn't, he can't believe. And the reason why you must know this pattern is the value of a counter-effort and the role it plays in aberration. It's tremendous. The role it plays in aberration is very great. And the reason you've got to know this is very simple. It's because every time your pre-clear gets into a heavy effort situation, and by the way, we're not talking about many present life situations. We're talking about effort. Real counter-efforts. Not this mamby-pamby stuff. He got run over by a truck and his lung was out there and the boat fell on him and crushed him and that sort of thing. Dickens with that. Let's get real counter-effort. Successive crowding waves of unmanageable, untamable force. Hitting him. He can't do a thing about it. Ooh. Your pre-clear starts to run because it's invalidating him. How invalidated can he be? Dead. Well, of course, the amount of force which can be exerted against a body which can't die demonstrates to you adequately where sooner or later that organism invented a way of looking awfully dead. But you take an organism which can't die, which has immortality natively built in, the amount of force that you can throw at it is so great, and the time it can endure this force is so long, that it'll pretty soon invent some kind of a symbol called a body that it can kick off and tear up, and someone says, that's dead. I don't even know about it. It's dead over there. You better leave me alone now. And we've got it refined down to a point where a single rifle bullet going through the head at 4,400 feet per second will kill a person. He'll actually abandon his body at this slight scratch. Therefore, when I tell you there's order of magnitude of effort on the track that doesn't compare to the effort which hits the physical body, you take this into account in the auditing. You're auditing something awfully heavy. It doesn't hurt him much. He doesn't scream very loud if you keep the windows closed. The neighbors don't object beyond the block away. The point is that your pre-clear in each one of these incidents goes through this whole cycle, simultaneously goes through as he is depressed down the tone scale by counter efforts which are overcoming him. He goes down simultaneously down each level of the chart of attitude. Bang, 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 until he gets apathy at the bottom. And he goes through simultaneously in each column every concept on those columns as force hits him. In other words, that thing which forms these things, all these columns and so forth, each one of these columns is the thought. First the emotion, low on the scale, and then the thought manifestation coming from any counter-effort, doing anything to a person. In other words, it's an extrapolation from invalidation. It's what effort does to a person. And that is described as the simultaneous lowering on this whole chart of attitudes. And he goes down to the bottom. He's being invalidated. And he gets down along the level. And the first thing you know, he says, you know, this is not having any reality to me anymore.
And pretty soon he says, well, it doesn't have any reality either. He says, I can't believe it. Well, this isn't true. Well, thank you for auditing me this far, but of course I can't believe this. What's he going through? He's just going through the strata, can't believe, on the chart of attitudes. Very simple. And you keep in there slugging him. You run him through, and the first thing you know, he'll pick up, and it'll get brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter, and he'll go on up the tone scale about the thing again. But you could bring him up to a point where you audited him through this incident, you audited him through the incident, it gets less real, and it gets less real, and he doesn't believe it, and he knows less about it, and he feels less about it, and he's more and more effect and less cause. He's just diving down the tone scale as you run these successive waves of force until he's really down at the bottom of the thing. He feels in apathy there. You keep auditing him, and he'll come right on up the line, up the top, up the line. Some of these incidents have such magnitude and force that you'd better know all there is to know about motivators, overt acts, and deads. Otherwise, you can't even touch them. They're just a solid... You know that some of them are as solid as a human body. Now, where we have this invalidation, then, any invalidation, on the thought level, it is simply one person giving a symbol to the other person, a symbol of words or a symbol of thought, saying, I'm smashing you in a little bit. I can smash you in, he says. Emotionally, is I can overcome your free energy. And on a mess level, I'm knocking the devil out of you. And that's invalidation all up and down the line. And you find people who become uncertain of their own survival, low tone on their own survival, they go around and all they can do is invalidate, invalidate, invalidate. They say, be dead, be dead, be dead, be dead. You say, well, I was working on pre-clear the other day, got pretty good results. And you say, well, they very often spin in afterwards, you know. Or you're saying, I'm feeling pretty good today. He said, well, you look awfully good. You look like you've got 3 or 4 years to go yet, something like that. You start to cheer him up, he answers you in a funereal tone. Or if people will do this, by the way, you've quite often had a 1-1 do this to you and never knew it. Never knew it. You start through a door and he is in your room. You start to take a chair and he is in it. This is the lower, insidious method of invalidation. But it's just on the scale of invalidation. It follows the natural course of this and that. He is escaping via attention units from a hollow spot from the position you're in, but he's being there too. He's escaping from you, but he is there. In other words, he's just starting the eddy of an outflow. He's at that point on the tone scale. If you really jumped him, he'd collapse or run. He'd go either way on the tone scale. If you jumped him. As it is, you generally think the best way to handle him is not to notice it, sort of avoid it, keep on letting him do it. That's dull, by the way, because it keeps you in ARC with a 1-1. That's very dull. It's very non-survival. What you say is what the hell are you doing in my road? That's one way to handle it. The other way to handle it is say, you poor fellow, you don't look well today. Or you validate him. You say, I'm going to help you out. Any of these things will change his tone scale position. Now, here then is the essence of this. You see this fellow thinking or not thinking up here in some level. You see an emotional, there's going to be an emotional pattern behind that. It's going to be a secondary of some sort or other. And earlier than that, there's going to be counter effort. I won't tell you how much earlier. There's going to be a counter effort incident earlier than that. And one stems out of the other, and each one is an invalidation. If you've ever been bruised, it was an invalidation of your continuation of existence. That light. If you are very, very sure of your own survival, you are almost impossible to invalidate. If you're not even vaguely sure of your own survival, anybody even looks at you, you tend to feel invalidated.